Do birds fly?
No, ask, speak to one another.
Oh, okay.
Good.
It's good to see you, Flavia.
Thank you, my friend.
That's beautiful.
All right.
Au revoir. No.
Arrivederci.
Arrivederci.
All right, so we'll start off with the first one. So you make your home in Florence. So describe the scene at the moment in regard to classical guitar at a tertiary level. You know how like you've got primary, secondary and tertiary? I don't know if that's what you
how
call
is
it.
The education?
Yeah.
Okay, education of music in Italy is still like the Renaissance idea of the bottega. The bottega of the artista means that you as a child go to the master and stay there for 10 years until you are a master yourself.
Okay.
There is still this idea. So you start young and you go to conservatory and you have 10 years of study with the same teacher.
Well, that's what we have. As an apprentice?
Something like that. Mm. It's something, this idea. Now they are changing the law. And so maybe next year we will change and we do like they do in other part of Europe, which is to cut in at least in two parts. Do the what they call in Germany conservatory is the first part, so you start from the beginning, you go to a middle level, let's say, and then you go to, they call it Hochschule, which means high school, and you do the more tough. Maybe they are changing now, but up to now that's how it is. So you go to conservatory, you are maybe 13 years old or 12 years old, and you start from the beginning and you go up for 10 years with the same teacher.
Oh, okay. So if you are 12 or 13 years of age, so you just continue and for how long? About 4, 5, 6 years?
In conservatory?
Yeah.
Ten years.
10 years. So they'll be about 22 by the time they have to get out.
Yes. Yes.
And what other subjects do they do? Do they do any other subjects?
In conservatory you do only musical subjects, so you do... you study history of music,
yeah.
You study first solfège, theory of music, basic theory of music, and then you do harmony, counterpoint and harmony.
Ah. So if they're 12 or 13, don't they get tutored in other subjects too, like mathematics and grammar? And
no, they study somewhere else. Most of the people does double study, you know, studying conservatory and in the normal school.
Oh, I see. I got the picture.
So, which is a kind of hard for them. They try to do different ways, but now they will change, probably because they want to harmonize the curriculum of study with the other part of Europe, now that there is the European Union, something. Things are changing.
All right. Now, I've heard that you have an incredible technical facility.
Well...
So, what does your practice consist of? Do you have a routine?
No.
You don't?
I never practice, actually, because I was practicing very much when I was young. When I was 5 years old, I started playing guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And until I was 10, let's say, I would study every day scales and arpeggios and simple technique, not very elaborated studies, but basic movements.
Mm-hmm.
I really worked very much on basic movement and going fast when I was a kid.
Yes.
And then I didn't have to do it again.
That's
because
good.
It's like you know how to do it and I don't have to practice. I just study the pieces of music, of course. So my study now is only musical. I mean, how to do the piece, the phrasing, the details of the piece, the memory to remember it by heart, you know. And I work on that, but I never do technique.
Just on that, with the memorization process, do you have a particular system where that's concerned?
Yes.
What does that involve?
I think that memorizing a piece can be seen on several levels. You can memorize musically how it goes, you know, in your mind. I mean the sounds, the sequence of sounds that you have in your mind. That's one level of memorization. Another one is how it looks like on the score.
Yeah.
Some people have a kind of visual memory and they remember the score.
Mm.
I don't. Mm. And the other one is to memorize the sequence of movement that you do with the hand, particularly with the left hand, or in your case, the right,
yes.
The left hand. Because I think this is the more important, because when you stop doing that, you stop playing. While sometimes, maybe happen to you, you can be in total confusion, but the hands still go on, because the body has its memory, we know, has
physical
a memory,
memory
physical
yeah.
memory. So I think that the best thing is to have to train the hand to do the sequence of movement, and to be aware, to be you as a being, to be aware of all the sequence of movement, so that you when I play and I feel good, let's say an optimum concert, when I play, I don't think absolutely of what I'm doing. I just think about what I want, how I want the music to be, and the body does it.
Does it? Yeah.
Yeah. Then maybe that sometimes I am distracted by something. Maybe somebody has the mobile phone that rings. You know,
yeah,
some
so what
bullshit.
Do you do there?
In that case, I take the thing doesn't work anymore. The memory, so I have to say the hand do that. So I have to know where to go.
Yes.
Because to relay only to the physical memory is very dangerous.
Oh, no.
Because it's unreliable. Anything can distract you. So the best thing is to know exactly all the sequence of movement and to control it from outside. So you don't think, when everything is fine, you don't even think of it. If something goes wrong, you bypass, but you have to know where to go.
Mm.
I don't know if it's clear.
Yeah, no, it's clear. So you've done all the analysis of the whole thing. You know, it's all its form, its shape, and everything that makes up what it is. So you've done that initial study. So now you just go through the routines.
Yes.
You set up all the circuits.
Yes. So what I do is to visualize the next movement. You know, I start with a piece, and before changing the position, I anticipate with my mind.
I visualize
the next. Then I do the next, and I visualize the one. So I anticipate all the sequence of movement, because when you memorize a piece on the guitar, it's like when a dancer memorizes a choreography. It's like he's a dancer. He's doing a lot of different movement. Goes from here to there to the jump. Boom. When do you make mistakes sometimes? You do a jump and maybe while you are going, where is it? You don't know, and you
yes.
make a mistake.
Yes.
So you have to know the choreography. You have, especially with the, you have to jump from one position to another, you visualize and you know they have to go there, you know.
Yes.
So much before you know that you go there. So this work, you can do it also without guitar. Sometimes when I have many, like for instance here in this tour, I did Singapore, Japan and Australia, and I will play 40 pieces.
Mm-hmm.
4-0. Mm-hmm. So I had to memorize 40 pieces of music. It's not, you know.
Yeah.
So sometimes I just, in the hotel, I just lay on the bed and I just visualize all the sequence of the piece of the whole concert.
Okay. Bar, 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 bar.
I visualized all the movement of the hand. I feel the music in my head and I visualize all the movement of the.
On the fingerboard?
Yes. Yes.
Mm.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Gotcha.
The visualization has to be the movement of the fingers on the, because this is the most important thing. Because when you stop doing that, you stop playing.
I know. Yeah, that's interesting. That's great. All right, we'll go on to the next one. So, now, what do you look for when preparing a piece of music for performance?
I want to create an effect, and I want to have my own view of the piece. So my concern when I study a new piece, I have to have the intuition that I have my own point of view on the piece.
Mm.
Otherwise I don't study it.
No.
For instance, if I listen a beautiful CD of a very good player and I think that I couldn't do anything better than that, I don't even start studying the piece, because I don't know. I would like to say something which is my way of saying, or that I think that is my way of interpretation of the piece. So when I study a piece for a concert, I try to have very clear a vision of how it has to be. And then so I work so that I become a reality, you know.
Okay. Oh, this is one. This is a good one. This one. So you've got a good judgment as far as looking at your programs. I can see that you exercise good judgment where programming is concerned. All right. So how do you devise a program?
Yes, I always try to balance some very well-known pieces of the repertoire of the guitar and some original pieces, very new, particularly of composers that I like. Or they are interesting. I think that any guitar concert has a part of the audience which are guitar enthusiasts, and some part are normal people who love music in general. And the proportion changes. For instance, if in guitar festival is drastically, you know, there are all guitarists, you know. If you go in a chamber music festival, sometimes there are no guitarists, they're all lovers of music. So, but there is all, let's say that average is, there's a mixture of these two kind of persons. So people who goes to a guitar concert wants also to see the real classical guitar. So I always put some piece which is very well known, like for instance now I play Barrios, four pieces by Barrios, or Sweet Popular Brazilian, you know, something which is very well known, so that I give some reality to the people who want, you know, and so they can accept also what I'm more interested in sometimes, which is new things written for me most of the time, like this piece by Chick Corea, for instance, or Nucho D'Angelo wrote a piece for me, other musicians. I try to encourage people to write music for the guitar so that we enrich the repertoire.
Fantastic, good. I've got some other questions along those lines a bit later. Now, so in your opinion, what constitutes the complete musician? What actually makes up the complete musician for you?
Well, once in the before romantic era, before the 19th century, a musician could play several instruments, compose, improvise, you know, at the age of Bach, for instance, any Bach himself could play violin, organ, you know, any keyboard. He could compose, he could improvise on the basso continuo, he could do improvised ornamentation and everything. So that was a complete musician. He could do almost anything, you know. He was a master of music and instruments. Then, in the Romantic period, becomes specialization.
Specialization. Yeah.
So there is now, the pianist plays only the piano, and maybe plays only Chopin, you know, or is specialized in Beethoven or in particular kind of repertoire.
But they don't really improvise the cadenzas, do they, like they
used
to?
No, not anymore.
I remember Elliot Fisk used to improvise on a Villa-Lobos cadenza.
Yes, I think that now is changing the situation, and so we are going back, you know, as before the specialist era that was from the, let's say, the end of 19th century up to a few years ago. You know, there was this kind of specialist of only one thing. Now it's opening up, and so I think the musicians start being more complete, start creating on different plans, not only interpretation of a certain area. And this is because of many things, of the market, because of globalization, because of many other things.
Yes, yes. So you're happy with that?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, do you agree with competitions? And do they have a role to play, do you think?
Well, I don't like competition, but...
Have you performed in any yourself?
Yeah, I did three competitions in my life. I was successful. I mean, I was first prize and 2 seconds, so it was not too bad. Very important competition there.
Did that help your career?
Well, they the positive things are, first of all, that a student sometimes don't know how good he is, you know, and so confronting a datum is, if you compare with other datum, you know better, you know. So somehow, the positive thing is that you are more aware of how your potential is, if you compare with other people and you know other people. And you prepare yourself, and so that's a good thing, you do it, you know. And the another good thing is that if you win, or if you go well, you are start being known in the world of the guitarist, not out of that. But in the world of the guitarist, if you start winning some competition, you are the one who won the competition, you know, somehow you already are in a more respected somehow. So for a young people, a young guy is good. That's the good thing. The bad thing is that, first of all, nowadays there are too many competitions. So I don't know how really is important to, you know, there are so many that...
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because I know there was always the... I always remember there was a 1975 Toronto competition, and there was people like Sharon Isbin and Elliot Fisk and all these.
Yeah, he's still pissed off.
Is
he? Oh, yes.
Still
pissed off.
And he threw his trophy away.
Yeah!
And went across
the
Thames River.
Yeah. He was really
It
upset.
Made him work harder, though.
And there was also Barueco, I think.
Yeah, Memo Barueco.
And then 75, we are speaking about 25 years ago,
yeah,
30 years ago. Now it's changed. Also, when I did the competition, they had the second prize. The first was Elliot Fisk. First was Elliot, second was me. But there were other guitarists very well known now were in the final, like Shinichi Fukuda, the Japanese, Wolfgang Lendl, the German.
Yeah.
They were sixth or fifth or something, you know, so there were a lot of good guitarists all together at that time. So it was good, you know, to be second in that situation was very exciting for me.
Yeah.
I said, well, I can be a world-class musician, you know, because, you know, I almost, you know, you I compared myself with a lot of very, very good, and I was... So that's a good thing. The bad thing nowadays is that so many that lost the real meaning, you know.
Sure.
And there are too many first, and the competition anyway, it depends very much how the jury is. If in the jury there are good people who have good judgment, it's fine, otherwise it's terrible, you know. The bad thing also of competition is that particularly in the last years there are people who just work for competitions. Now, since there are two aspects of music when you play, one is quantity and one is quality. Quality is something that is subjective. You can play something beautiful and someone can say, I don't like it. And there is nothing you can do because it's just a subjective point of view. And that's the quantity. Quantity is how many mistakes you do or how fast you go. That's a quantity.
Sure.
But the quantity is unquestionable. It's unquestionable. Because he did no mistake. That's unquestionable. Nobody can argue. So, happens that people that work for competition is more careful to the quantity than to the quality. And so we had a lot of very, very good technically musician, guitarist, who play very fast and very precise and never miss a note, but they're terribly boring. They don't say anything. Does it make
I've
sense?
I've said it time and time again.
So, now, when I do master classes, when I teach, I'm very insistent on this point that, yes, you have to be to have a good technique. Because without technique, you cannot express what you want. That's fine. But technique is only a mean to say something. And I always say this, that nowadays there are a lot of very good guitarists. But who do you remember? Who is making career? Is making career the one who has a personality, not the one who go fast. There are too many who go fast now.
I know.
And any computer can go faster anyway.
Because it's like it's athletics.
Yeah,
you know?
It's ridiculous. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's just. Yes, go. Good. All right. Now. Are you happy with your current tour of Australia and Asia?
Yeah. It's fine. It's a little too hectic, you know, because one concert a day is somehow heavy.
Yes. Are there distinct differences between audiences? I've heard that, like in Japan, they don't really they don't applaud until the very end.
Yeah. They're more shy. Let's say they're more shy. Yes, compared with the Latin. Audience which make a lot of noise, that's for sure. But they show appreciation in many ways, anyway.
Mm.
For instance, I am receiving a lot of emails from Japan, from people who was in my concert that I don't know, telling how they appreciate it.
Wow, that's great. Okay. Now, does the future of guitar education lean more towards ensemble or solo playing? Or a mixture of both, or more emphasis on one? What do you think?
I think that ensemble is something that is not a long time that we have guitar ensemble fashionable, let's say.
Mm.
Right? Because in the many years ago, like 50, 60 years ago, there were big ensemble of guitar, mandolin.
Mm.
You know? Yes. Then it was not fashionable anymore for a long time. Now they become fashionable. Why? Because there are a lot of classical guitarists also that don't find any situation in which they can play because the quality is very high, so it's difficult now to be a solo performer, a professional. You have to be very good. You have to be very good, and you have to have also to be willing to do it, so to push a lot, you know. So there are many guitarists who play very well, but don't have much opportunities. And so there is this tendency of making groups.
Mm.
This is one, but also because the group can give you a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You can play music that you would never play.
I listened to a wonderful recording the other day by the Los Angeles
Guitar Quartet.
Yeah, with Andrew York and...
Myself, I had a big group. For some years, I had the Guitar Sinfonietta, was called.
Yeah.
A 22 pieces group.
Wow.
Yes. And you know who was the conductor? It was Leo Brauer.
Oh, was it?
Yes. There is a CD. We did only one CD.
Is that the one I've got, I told you about?
Yeah.
The red cover. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow,
so
that's a superb...
Yeah, it was very nice.
Recording.
And... So there is also this positive part. I mean, you can do very, very nice things with the ensemble. And also, I think for educational point of view, it's very important to play with groups and with people. Because if you only play solo, you don't develop the sense of rhythm sometimes because you don't develop the feeling, the sensitivity of playing with somebody else.
Mm.
So that beautiful feeling of influencing the other person and being influenced by that person.
Yes.
You know?
I noticed that you place a lot of emphasis on different mediums. Like, for example, you've done the Tedesco piece. What was that with the
With the choir?
Choir?
Yeah,
yes.
Sure.
And then on the other hand, you play with the flautist. On the other hand, your new release is Concerto, the Vivaldi Concertos in the...
Yeah.
So there's a lot of emphasis with different formats.
Yes. My main activity is solo, of course, but I like very much to do chamber music with other musicians for the reasons that I told you, because first of all, I couldn't, you can play very well solo, but the effect that you create with a group is different because the range of the different quality of sounds with other instruments is another thing, of course, obviously. So I enjoy that, and so when I can, I play with chamber music, with chamber groups, or with other instruments. I have a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Now, what I'd like you to explain is the commission process. So do you state what you need and want, or do you leave it up to the composer when a commission is made?
I never made any commission.
Haven't you? I thought you did.
No.
You did with Chick Corea.
No, he did it for me.
Oh, okay.
I ask why do it, but I never commissioned like paid a piece of music in my life.
Okay.
So I had all composer dedicating pieces to me.
That's fine.
At the moment,
okay.
But it's the same concept anyway. So, but being like that, I just take what they give me, you know.
Yeah.
But I have to say, when I work very much with the composers, if they are not guitarists.
Mm.
So in the process of the composition, I work with them. To make it possible to do.
Mm.
For instance, there is a composer called Oliviero Lacagnina he wrote two concerts for me, one for...
How do you spell it, just so when I transcribe?
Lacagnina, L-A-C-A-G-N-I-N-A.
Okay.
Lacagnina. Anyway, he wrote one piece for guitar and orchestra, and one piece for guitar and string quintet. And he can play the guitar, so I had to work on my part very much, and I enjoyed it, so I can contribute, you know. So let's say that when they write for me, I don't give indication because I don't think it's proper somehow, but I help in the process of writing as far as my part is concerned.
Okay, good. Now, you're a champion of Brower's works. You obviously, I mean, you've got a couple of recordings devoted to his compositions.
Yes.
So what sets him apart from the others?
That any kind of language he used, and he used different languages, very, very different from minimal, from contemporary 70s avant-garde stuff,
yes.
Popular, but any kind of stuff he does, any kind of language he used to compose, he has always a very strong communicative strength. He's always himself, you can recognize him.
You can, can't
yes.
you?
So that's the thing I like. And also from the point of view of the instrument, he found a lot of new things, new way of putting the notes together. Also the instrumental aspect of the thing is very interesting.
Mm.
And he gave several innovations. To name only one, the Espiral Eterna. Are you familiar with this piece? Espiral Eterna is one of the 1971,
yes.
I think.
Yes.
And he has all these.
Is it the Eternal Spiral?
Yes, Eternal
yes.
Spiral, yeah.
Okay.
Which use these clusters of notes.
Yes.
And he used it, one after the other. He used many languages, many auto instrumental things, very interesting.
Mm.
I think he has been influenced in the 60s by Hans Werner Henze.
Yes.
Because Hans Werner Henze, which is, I think, a fantastic composer, he wrote the Drei Tentos, which is very
yes.
famous, made by Julian Bream, but he wrote also the Cimarron, which is a fantastic piece for a baritone, for voice, male voice, flute, guitar, and percussion. It's 1 hour and 40 minutes long.
Yes.
And I played 20, 25 times, I don't know how many times. And it's very, very good. Now, the first performance of the Cimarron, the guitarist was Leo Brower in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And he obviously worked very much with Henze to do the score for the guitar. And you can find in the Cimarron all the elements that he will develop then in the other pieces.
Ah,
that's very interesting.
So that's when he planted the seed earlier on in that.
Yes.
And then it's been developing ever since in
yeah.
various other.
That's my opinion, but
yeah.
if you see the score, you can recognize the treatment of the instrument. Because probably Henze wanted something, and he found the solution, you know, solution the guitar. And this solution then he used for
yes.
for many things. That's what I think.
Yes, that's an interesting viewpoint. Now getting back to Brower, his arrangements of the Beatles songs.
Yes.
They're exquisite, aren't they?
Very nice. I played it so many times.
I know, and you're recording. So they're a milestone. So should these be considered as examples for other pop songs?
Why
I
not?
Mean, in that they've been done, he created a precedent.
Well, in this particular version of the Beatles songs are interesting because he treated each one of them in the style of a different composer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, one. So he saved the melody. The melody is absolutely as the Beatles wrote.
Yes.
But all the background is one as Smetana, one as Bartok, one as Hindemith. You see, it's a is a kind of exercise of compositions in a way. But if you listen with this point of view, you can recognize the style of Bartok, for instance, or
right.
While the melody is absolutely respecting the Beatles song.
Yes, that's clever. Now, getting back to Chick Corea, so how did Chick Corea's composition come about?
Well, I met Chick Corea in Los Angeles because we are both Scientologists,
yeah.
and in an occasion I was playing in this Celebrity Center in Los Angeles, and he was there, and he liked very much the performance, so he invited me for a coffee, and we became friends.
Mm-hmm.
And in several occasions, we had the chance also to play together, one piece, particular Spain, you know, this kind of...
Oh, you did that together?
Yeah, many times.
So, you're amplified?
Yes, amplified, yes. I would play the Aranjuez part, you know, at the beginning, and he would improvise with the piano behind it, and then we start the real piece, you know. It was very fun. But every time I would see Chica, I would say, why don't you write something for the guitar? And eventually he said, okay, I did. And he tried this little improvisation, and he sent it to me, and I edited for the guitar. Somehow I had to do very, very small changes, because some of them were absolutely impossible to do.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that were possible, I found some solution to make it somehow more guitaristic, because even if they were in the right range, later I show you with the guitar if you want. Anyway, I had to find some solution to make it more resounding well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I did some, he liked the result, so I started playing all around the world, and I recorded it. It will be released in the CD next month in October.
Good, great. So do you think, can we expect more from him?
Well, that's what I hope. I always ask him to write a big piece for the guitar.
Because I know he was talking about a concerto at one stage.
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, and also the children's songs. He